obviously my mom didn't want me doing boxing, including my own family, that you have to realise when people project something's crazy or that you can't do it, that's their own limitations. Like, as much as I'm in it for the longevity of being a world champion, I'm also in it to make, there's no point in striving for a dream that you don't enjoy.
Who are you modelling or who are you looking up to right now in the industry?
To be honest, you can't focus on both the win or the loss. You have to focus on what's ahead, because that's not the end of your life there. You got to keep going to the next step, the next step. There's always a next. I do this because...
Welcome to the Dream Out Loud family, where young entrepreneurs come to learn the tips, tricks, and attitude of what it takes to live their dream life. I'm your host, Morgan T. Nelson, a former carpenter who created financial freedom by the age of 23 and have since spent my time traveling around the world living my dream life, inspiring, educating, and teaching other young people how they can do the same. Each and every week, I'll bring you the most epic guests who are going to share their stories, wisdom, tips, and tricks on how they've been able to create a life by design. Here at Dream Out Loud, we're committed to helping inspire and educate you to be able to execute your full potential. All right, guys, today's guest is the number one female boxer in the world for the WBO division for super flyweight. She's number three in the world for the IBF. She's number one in the world under 25. She's had a total of 83 fights, 5 Australian titles, and this woman went from being an apprentice chef to the youngest ever female boxer to fight in the Commonwealth Games, where she took home a bronze medal. I'm super excited for this episode. It's going to be kind of different from the ones we've usually had, but I know it's going to be absolutely juicy from everything we've just been talking about. So please help me welcome my dear friend, Taylor Robertson.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm living the dream.
Living the dream.
How are you?
Yeah, really good.
You've got an insane week ahead of you. You're literally smashing this interview and you're on a plane tomorrow. Tell everybody where you're going tomorrow.
We're off to Vegas tomorrow, just for a training camp. We're supposed to be fighting in Canada on March 26th, but the main event hurt his hand, so it's been postponed. So now we're just going to continue our travels to America and jump into a training camp in the Top Rank boxing gym, and then wait for a phone call to receive news about a new fight or location for fight.
Yes. So talk to us about obviously this is your life, this is your career, this is everything. And how do you deal with is there a level of disappointment in the fact that this fight's not going ahead, or is it sort of just like the way it is, or do you have to learn to deal with the unpredictability? Because you can't really, like, there's been some of the biggest matches in the world.
Yeah.
You get hurt in camp or something and it's just off. Like, how do you deal with that?
You definitely get used to the being unpredictable, but like last year I had 3 fights fall over because the main events got injuries. So I got really used to it last year, but then I kind of thought this year having an international contract, it wouldn't happen as frequently. And then my first fight, it happened again. I was like, oh, it's very disappointing, but my team and I move really quick and we had to optimize that. I didn't want to stay home and not do anything. So we just brainstormed over the last 2 days and we're like, okay, we're going to still continue on our path to America, because America, especially Vegas, is like the capital of boxing in the world. Yeah. So we're still going to continue our path there, network, and our promoter's going to try lock us in another fight. So we're just going to, you know, optimize the best out of this situation as much as we can. And I think everything happens for a reason, and I think more opportunities could come from now this training camp. So
I love it. Because as I just said that, I just thought back. So I told you before we started, right? So I did Muay Thai when I was super young, like maybe 14 to 20 or some shit like that. And I had only 2 fights, one in Thailand.
Yeah.
And then one here. But because I was in this weird weight division where it was so hard to get a matchup.
Yeah.
And I was sober on my 18th birthday.
Yeah.
Because I was training for this fight here. And I think it was literally having 2 times, sorry. 2 days before the fight.
Yeah.
Old mate gets injured, pulled out. And I was crushed.
And this was over in Thailand?
And this was here.
Yeah.
So I spent the last like 12 weeks training my ass off.
Yeah.
Skipped my 18th birthday and everything for it. And I was just so fucking pissed.
Yeah.
And then we did it one more time. Trained my absolute ass off. We get to the fight day and old mate rocks up and he couldn't fight. And I was so pissed. I'm backstage now.
Yeah, right? You put in so much work.
I was gutted, but I was an 18-year-old angry shithead as well. And I was backstage and I was so freaking pissed off. And I was like, I was annoyed. And there was this other guy over here also pissed off. And he was a lot bigger than me. I think he was about 8 kilos bigger.
Yeah.
I forget how many things up that is.
Yeah. That's a few weights divisions. Yeah. Yeah.
And he was pissed off as well. And I was like, the fuck's your problem, right? That was testosterone backstage. And he had a dude pull out. I had a dude pull out. We got into like a heated thing backstage. And then we're like, we'll fucking go. We'll go. And I looked at Pete. And I'm like, can we? He's like, yeah.
Yeah.
So we were like, boom. So we ended up just matching up this. So it wasn't it was an amateur fight. So anyway, we matched up this one. And that was the only fight that ever went ahead here in Australia.
How'd you go?
I fucked him up. It was amazing.
Really? Yeah. That's awesome.
He was like a whole head bigger than me.
I'm so glad you got to get all that training out. That's awesome.
After that one for me though, I was just like, it was so, I couldn't deal with the fact of putting in all this effort and not knowing. So how, like, now I know what I know. You've got to have some sort of massive driving force behind you,
yeah.
Other than just the will to want to beat the shit out of some other girl. What is it for you? Why do you do this?
I do this because I'm good at it. To be honest, like I feel like you enjoy things that you're good at, and I've just always enjoyed it. I started it obviously a long time ago for fitness as a kid, and then. Because I was good at it, I enjoyed it, and I sucked at every single other sport I tried. I tried soccer, swimming. I did lots of other things. I actually was like not just a little bit bad. I was really bad. Like I just sucked, and I actually was going to give up on sport. I was going to try tennis at one point, and I was only going to do sport to be fit. But then this sport I just happened to be good at. I just had that little mongrel inside of me to want to be good at it. So I just stuck it through and progressively got better and better and better, and then I went on like an undefeated streak when I first started. And then I feel like from there, when you like can accept, oh, this is, I just felt like this was for me. This was like my calling in life when I was starting to do that. So then obviously my mom didn't want me doing boxing, and that's just a whole new, like her daughter's doing boxing and this isn't a career. This is your meantime hobby. And I had to convince mom all the time. I'm like, this is just a hobby, mom. And then every year I'd have to do it as a hobby. And then I don't know if you've seen Million Dollar Baby, but how she like paralyzes herself in boxing because someone fights dirty. Yeah. It's got Clint, I think it's Clint Eastwood in it. And
Million Dollar Baby, I'll check it out.
Yeah. Anyways, and mum watched that movie and she got terrified for me to fight. And I was like, it's all right, mum, I'm not going to get to that point. Like, it's just little girls that I'm fighting. This is me at 36 kilos. I'm like, I'm not ever going to be. And now here I am still fighting as a pro. So I guess I think I dedicated so much of my childhood to it, I couldn't give it up now. Like,
when did you start it?
Between 10 and 12.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, and you're 24 now.
Yeah.
Damn, so you've had 83 fights? 83 fights?
Yeah, roughly that.
What does she think about it now?
She loves it. She's, now that I've dedicated and I've shown the dedication that I'm about to apply to it, I'm not just in a thug's game where I'm just like trying to fight in local pubs and, you know, like I've dedicated myself and applied myself over the last, I don't know even how many that years, 10, 15 years, that she can see that this is not something I'm taking seriously. I'm giving it 100% to her now. She's just my biggest fan.
That's so amazing. How about your dad?
We have a complicated relationship, but he We're good now. We've just had a lot of distance over the last few years. He was in the army a lot, so he'd go overseas a lot. He wasn't as supportive about the boxing. He definitely had a lot more of a mindset of just be lucky you've made it this far kind of mindset. He was a very, I think he put his own limitations, what he could think possible on me, and my limitations were a lot more than what his was. So we definitely had a lot of friction because of that, but we're in a good place now, which is good. He's still not really involved in my boxing at all. So
yeah. So how do you overcome that? Because I feel like a lot of people, and I love what you said. So at the beginning, your mom was sort of like, no, don't do that, as probably any mom would be.
Yeah.
But then she, I think the turning point for her would have been when she really started to see you said you're absolutely dedicated for
it.
And I think a lot of people see that. They're in this period of when they want to start, let's say, a business or their dreams, go after their dreams. And the most of the world think they're crazy.
Yeah.
Until they see this 100% committed action for them.
Yeah,
and then
absolutely.
It goes to the other side. So how did you bear with the, you know, from both your parents, I guess not doubting, but like not really backing you the whole way. How did you get through that period until it was easy?
It was really hard. Like I remember catching up for a coffee with my dad before I was fighting in the Commonwealth Games. And his words to me were, just be happy that you've made it this far, as if I was not even going to win. I was not going to get a medal. I was not going to. And I was like sitting there eye twitching, looking at him like, who says that to someone right before I'm about to compete I've made, it's like, I'm just be glad you've got into the Commonwealth Games. I was like, that's not why I'm here, Dad. Like, so I feel like it did take a, it took a little bit for me to not get under my skin, but now I'm definitely, I had to realize and overcome, and I've done through that through having mentors and people who I look up to and aspire to, and I follow their ways where they are so unbothered by people's comments and stuff like that, including my own family, that you have to realize when people project something's crazy or that you can't do it, it's, that's their own limitations. It's not your limitations. And if I'd listened to that when I was a kid, or if I'd listened to that when I was finishing high school, if I'd listened, I'd never be in the positions I am now. So, yeah.
So what did you believe to be true about you going to the Commonwealth Games? You're 18, right?
Yeah. Yeah, at 18, I was going to those Commonwealth Games with nothing else other than winning a gold medal. Like, there was not an option of any less. We did a grueling, like, I think it was like 20 weeks. I moved to Canberra. I was on a sporting scholarship, so I was just training full-time. I had coaches, physio meetings. I don't know if you've been to the AIS, but they have, like, snack rooms. They have kitchens that cook for you, so you're not really doing much. You just have a timetable, you go to your pod, and then you go to train, you go to the cafeteria, you have set times for meals, they cook your meals, then you have a snack room with like your up and goes. So your whole life is just surrounded about being an athlete. You're in Canberra, there's no nightlife, there's nothing fun to do, the shopping's not great. So you're living and breathing the sport. And then we had a 7-week block in the Philippines, and it was just really grueling and hard. And every day your body would get wrecked, and then the next morning you have no choice, you're on a scholarship. So this is what you're here to do. So you have to get up and do the session, you have to make the times, the coaches are there. And there was some mornings where you'd get up and do track, like especially in the Philippines, it's a very military style training there, and you have to line up, pray, and you go to the track, and then you start doing runs. If you're not hitting times, you get yelled at. It's just like a very military. And one track morning was so messed up, and then I only had a 3-hour gap before I did a rowing session, which was up in a gym. And that rowing session, it was like 8 kilometers total of 8 blocks of sprints, like 1 kilometer sprints, I think it was. And I think I got to round 4 and my whole tank was shot, and I was on the floor. I couldn't comprehend getting back up and doing another 4 of what I'd just done. And all the coaches were in my ear and they're like, you're going to get a gold medal, you're going to get a gold medal. And we were sparring, and all my sparring, I was just doing so well. Like, I was beating all the other countries that I was sparring on. In my head, I was so confident to win a gold medal. Like, there was just, I didn't even accept the fact that I couldn't win a gold medal.
Like, is that what was pulling you through it?
Yeah, the just fact the vision I'm going to get a gold medal, and then this is going to change my life. That's what I kept thinking. I was like, once I get a Commonwealth Games gold medal, opportunities are all going to come. Everything will just work out. I wasn't even thinking how it would work out, but that's just what I thought. And then when I went to the Games and I lost in the semifinals to England by a point, which who went on to win gold, that was just like really not, like in my head I walked in, I just cried in the change room because I just didn't know what to do. And at 18, I'd never really felt that kind of loss before, where you've dedicated your whole life to something and then you haven't got it. And then I just cried. Coaches were like, you did good, you did so well. Like, and I was like, this isn't good. Like, I was like, this isn't what I came for. And then I was like, I don't even want the medal. Like, it was really bad. But I now at this point love my medal because it shows what I kind of went through, and it's like, oh, yeah. And I learn a lot from that experience now going forwards. Like, if I take, I've had a loss in the pros and I think I took it really well. Like, it was another close loss to the world number one, Shannon O'Connell, and everyone, there was a lot of controversy around the fight. Lots of people thought I won. The commentator said I won, but I actually took the loss on the chin. I was like, you know what? It's not supposed to be. No, this was now going forward how I learnt from the Comm Games one. So now as a pro, I'm gonna have my first loss to Shannon O'Connell, and I sort of took it on the chin and was like, you know what, this is, I needed to kick up the ass. I needed to now turn around and be like, you need to do more to win fights, and then you keep going.
Yeah, I think there's a fine line in having such high standards for yourself and demanding the best. And I think any elite athlete, someone who's the best in the freaking world, you need to have this level of fucking hard on yourself. You'd be like, I don't expect anything other than the absolute freaking best. But then on the other side of it, it's also like your own soul.
Yeah.
So how do you find the line of having such high standards for yourself and demanding nothing other than the best, but then also being kind to yourself? Is there a line?
I don't know if there is a line. Like, I feel like you've got to have moments of appreciating what you've done, but at the same time, in the moment, after a bad spar, for instance, my worst critic will always be myself. I'll get out and I'll be, I always come home, like, it just ruins my mood because I haven't done well. And other people will all say I've done well, but to me, I know what my standard is and I know that wasn't good enough. So I feel like you've always got to have that if you want to continue to strive to be better, and you can't be settled like, yeah, I did really good today, and then not like that. But I also do think in moments like after a fight or after in certain moments where you've achieved something, you've also got to pat yourself on the back as well and give yourself that. I feel like that's where the line is. I feel like it's got to be a balance.
I explain to people, I'm like, you got to be extremely appreciative and extremely grateful for who you are and what you've become, but equally disgusted.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is where I think it's so important. So talk to me about the people you surround yourself with through all these. Like, obviously, you've got a posse here. The studio's full. But like, and I know you'd probably travel with a team. And how important is it having the right people around you? Because I could imagine, let's say you get bronze.
Yep.
I could imagine some people around you would be like, yeah, you know, well, here's what you could do better next time to get it. And then you're like, this is constructive for me. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then some other people could also be, oh, but you've done so well. Yeah, that is which it. Is great and it feels good. But for what your goals are and what you want, it's not useful kind of in a way. So how important is it having the right people around you, and how do you know if the people around you are the right people around you?
Yeah. Well, I feel like they've got to be adding value to your life, the people around you. Like, at some sort of capacity, there's got to be a value there. But I feel like I have two sorts of the people around me. I have in my immediate work life, as in boxing, I have lots of like-minded athletes, mentors, coaches, and all these people I surround myself with only want the best for me, and we all want the best for each other. And it's a really good, and that's where I sort of feed a lot of my motivation off of, is them. And they're very like-minded. Like, one of my teammates, Sugar Neeks, she's the current IBF world champion. So she gets it. So when we're training or something, we'll understand. Or there's other athletes, Jaden Nikarima, he plays for the Storm. He's in my circle and all this. And they all understand what it takes, and they get that part of you that's hard on yourself. But then I also then have my family and my friends outside of my sport, which is also an escape, because I feel like you've got to have balance. And then that's more of a support in the sense
emotional
support. And I can go to the beach and I can let my mind have a rest. I can, you know, have downtime with. So there's just, I feel like I have two different surroundings, and I float between depending on where I am in camp or where I'm out of camp. Or if I need a day off in camp and I just need to be out of it for a day. I just feel like you've got to have that balance of lifestyle. A lot of people dedicate 100% to their sport. They live and breathe it. They don't have friends outside of it. They don't have anything. And then they get an injury or their career ends. They don't achieve what they've wanted to achieve. And they go back to nothing and they get depressed. They get usually larger. They don't know who they are. They have an identity crisis. What are they without the sport? And then it's just a big downhill spiral. And I've seen it with so many older people in the sport. They don't know how to give it up because that's all they have. And I don't want that to be me. I want to have things outside of the sport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you bring a level of personal development mindset? Like, I know, like, we were talking about Jake Paul before he started, right? And you see the things he does. Like, and what I love about Jake, actually, is the same thing what I love about Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
The fact that just such a dickhead and does it so well. Like, could you – I could not imagine. I get so – I admire them so much to be able to stand up in the face of the whole freaking world.
Yeah.
And straight up act and know they're acting like a complete fucking dick and cop the arrows in the back of the majority of people until they've proved themselves.
Yeah.
Fuck me. Like, I couldn't do that.
Honestly.
I think that's insane.
Yeah.
But I love that about his attitude. But what's also cool, like, he's super young. He'd be about your age, isn't he?
He's like 25, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's bringing, like, I feel like this, our generation is more open to personal development and mindset and consciousness and all this. And he talks about this, like, spiritual development he's doing. He's doing breath work and all this stuff. Do you bring in an element of any of that into your...
I have brought in breath work, and I've done it, and I really like it. I feel like it's calming. I've done it with coaches, and I've done it solo with the Hof app and all that kind of stuff. Wim Hof, yeah. So I've done a few of them, but for me, I do like it. I didn't like it when I brought the coach in because I felt like I wasn't doing it for me, for my own self-benefit. I felt like I was doing it because I had to, and it was a booked-in session with the coach. Right. But when I was doing it on the beach with the Wim Hof app, I really enjoyed it. I felt calm. I felt peaceful. I was like, I felt sharper. I was setting myself up for the day. But then when I did it with the coach, no disrespect to the coach. He's awesome. But I just feel like you got to find what works for you as well. Mm-hmm. And I've done the ice stuff. I've done my coach is also a mind coach, and he's in the personal development space. So he's really big. I go to lots of his talks and stuff like that. Yeah. So
Who is it?
Glenn Azar.
Glenn Azar. Oh,
Really? Yeah, no, he runs like personal development. He's doing youth development at the moment, and he also does he runs adventures and leads adventures in Kokoda, Mount Everest, and all those things. So he's in a lot of different spaces. So I think I learn a lot from him, to be honest, and I follow things he does. And he's got this thing where he handles everything so calmly, and I'm not so much of a calm person, but I'm definitely learning a lot from him. And even this current situation when my fight got postponed, I was a bit. And he was like, all right, calm down. What are we? And he speaks to me about goal setting. He speaks to me about, you know, victim mindsets. He speaks to me about all these things and puts me in check a lot. So I feel like having him surrounding, and he's a big mentor for me.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What's up, Dream Nation? Have you ever wondered how far ahead your life would have already been if you had got access to this type of content at a younger age? Look, this is why I need your help. I'm trying to build the number one personal development platform out there to teach you guys the tips, tricks, and attitude of what it takes to live your dream life and to bring the type of education that we all wish we had in school. This show only grows by word of mouth and new subscribers, so it would mean the world to me if you could smash that subscribe button right now, leave us a 5-star written review, or drop a comment below and share this episode with a friend. I would be forever grateful. All right, now let's get back into this episode. Cool. So you told us, so the Commonwealth Games was one of your first defeats?
No.
Well, it was actually a pretty fucking good win, to be honest.
Yeah.
A bronze fucking medal. Like the people who make it to Commonwealth Games to start with is already the elite. And then I guess that's fine, the most elite of the elite, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So is that, was that the first kind of?
No, I'd had losses as an amateur. Your amateur is like your resume, so to go pro. So I definitely had losses, and that's where you're supposed to have your losses. You're supposed to trial and error, you're supposed to, and I'd gone like 20 fights undefeated at the start of my career. And then I think I got really complacent, and my first loss, I was in high school, and I went out to a high school party and I drank and whatnot. And then
before the fight.
Yeah, the Friday night, and I was going to the fight on Saturday. So I'd actually fought this girl. This is my first lesson about that.
Some of my
best
fights have been when I've been drunk, though.
Yeah, but I fought this girl the weekend before, and I beat her convincingly at an event where I hadn't drank. And then I weighed in at the next tournament and didn't tell anyone that I'd gone out the night before, and I was getting a bit complacent because I was just winning so much. Mm. So I was a bit complacent, and my coach told me to weigh in not knowing I'd drank the night before, and I just thought, I'll weigh in and see who's there. And then the girl who I beat last weekend weighed in. And then they're like, perfect, there's a match. I was a bit in my head like, oh, should I be doing this? And then that was my first loss.
Right.
So.
Okay, so I think it's quite normal though, right? So you had 20 wins, young as well.
Yeah.
Get complacent, which I think also like it's so relatable to anyone listening that's in business as well.
Yeah.
Like I continue to have to keep checking myself.
Yeah.
Like I was financially free at 23 and it was very easy to chill and do nothing for the rest of my life. But I had to keep continually going, pushing these new limits, these new heights.
Yeah.
How do you get out of being complacent? How do you continually strive for, like, you are the best right now?
Yeah.
Like, what do you do to keep that up? Like, when you're not chasing anybody.
I think of me coming up and who I was chasing, and they're all chasing me now. So everyone's wanting my ranking. I'm going to get, if I win a world title, everyone's going to want to hump me. And they're not going to be, the development of female boxing is only getting better. So they're going to get better, the younger girls coming through. They're going to get better and better and better. And they're going to, if you stop, they're going to outgrow you. And then they're going to take over the sport. And that's what I had to do when I was fighting for the Commonwealth Games. I was not expected to win. I was like 17 when I was going for the trials and I was supposed to lose. And, then I came out and won every single thing. And if I'd, you know, got if I was that hungry girl and they got complacent. So I went out and beat all the 28-year-olds who'd been to the last Commonwealth Games Olympics. And then when I came in and beat them, I believe they were too complacent that they didn't even threaten for me. And I've got to be careful now. And I think I've set that whole pathway there where I can literally see how I can be overtaken. And that's what I used to always say is like, these girls are sleeping on me. They're, you know, and I don't want to sleep on anyone. I want to stay hungry. So
I love it. So what's the difference? So I saw, so in your professional record, so 7 wins, one loss, right?
Yeah.
What is the, and that was the real tight one.
That was a really controversial loss. Okay. Yeah.
So what's the difference? So you've had a couple losses and you've had shit tons of wins.
Yeah.
What is the difference between winning and that microsecond loss?
It's the highest of highs and lowest of lows, I'd say. The winning feeling is such a high, such an adrenaline rush. you feel so good. The weeks after, you have some downtime and you're on top of the world. And then a loss is just like the complete opposite. And it's such a shit feeling, to be honest. Like a loss in boxing, it's just like your whole life, like your whole livelihood. It's just, you feel like you're nobody. You feel like you're nothing. It doesn't matter how many wins you've had. That loss is now your defining moment. So it's just really hard to come past. And I honestly, I don't have a how I get through that, because I think it just takes time. And to be honest, I think it takes getting back into the gym. If I sit on my hands for too long, I'll feel like a loser even more. I feel like, oh, shit, I need to get that win back. I need to go back and fight again ASAP. I need to prove to people that that's not my best.
Yeah. What about in terms of your mindset and skill set, the attitude? What's the difference in drive, the difference in the way you think, the way you act? How you perform,
I feel like,
in the ring.
After a win, the way I act is almost as in, what's next? What can I achieve now? Like, what can I do next? And then I think it's the same in a loss. It's still, what's next? How do I redeem that? Where do I go? Because you can't focus on both the win or the loss. You have to focus on what's ahead, because that's not the end of your life there. You got to keep going to the next step, the next step. There's always a next. So I'm always thinking ahead of what's next then.
Yeah.
How do I do that?
In terms of performance during the fight, Is it the same for you, or have you looked back and been like, nah, I've acted differently. I didn't prep myself properly, or I got in my head more, or was there anything like that? Or is it just a straight like, shit, that person was actually just better in those times? Or
no, I've definitely critiqued myself, like with the title loss I had with O'Connell. We step by step through that fight, we thought we were winning every single round. To be honest, like we'd maybe given her one round. So every single round, I went back to my corner and my team, like, yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome, blah, blah, blah. And no one, I could have stepped it up again, and we chose not to, because we knew we were in a dangerous fight with her name. So we were like, oh, we don't want to get into too many clinches with her and risk getting a KO. Imagine she just lands one good shot. I'm like, we're so far ahead, we don't need to do that. Mm. The commentators, if you watch the fight, were just hyping me up the whole fight, like, wow, this is just coming out, just doing this. So if you watch the fight back, if you go to the end, you think, oh, shit, she's won. And then at the end, when I didn't get the win, it was a split point. One judge gave it to me, one judge gave it to her, and then the other second judge gave it as a close decision to her. So then we were like, and then at the end, I was like, oh. And then when we sat down and talked about it and we were like, okay, where'd this loss come about? Glenn's like, I shouldn't have been telling you you were doing good every round. And he's like, I should have been pushing you to go better every single round. He's like, I could have told you to take it up a step, and I didn't think we needed to. So looking back, I definitely could have pushed harder in that fight. And I didn't even break a sweat in that fight. If you watch the fight, I don't have a sweat. My gas tank didn't. And that's weird for a fight, but I felt so comfortable. My feet work. I just felt good. But now watching the fight back, I can see where I could have done better. I could have pushed better. You can't leave it to the judge's hands like that. I feel like you've just got to do a convincing win. And I thought I was winning the exchanges, but I think I could have just been pushing more.
Yeah.
So I feel like you've got to critique. And I don't want to ever say, I still don't believe she's better than me. No, not at all. And I think if we rematch, I'll secure that win a lot more convincingly. But we're also at different weight divisions now, so it's a bit hard to get that rematch.
Right. I was going to say, do you think it will happen or no?
It's always an option, to be honest. She's just had a devastating loss over in the UK where she got brutally battered, to be honest. And now it's also like, what's in it for me now? Because I've progressed on to a heap of wins against Japan and all this since that fight at my own weight division, and she's gone on to a devastating loss. So people may not want to see the fight anymore either. Yeah. But I kind of do want to get that win back on my record, and I think it's a very achievable win for me to get. But then I also have to go through the process. She's like a McGregor. Not even like a McGregor. She's like a very draining person to fight. She just talks a lot of shit.
Cool. So that leads me to what I want to ask next. So the shit talking.
Yeah.
I want to watch one of your fights. So please tell me how I can watch your next fight. I want to watch
I'll send you the link.
Because, you know, the most, like, to be honest with you, I don't watch boxing, but I've watched Jake's.
Yeah,
because he just talks so much shit. And I'm I got up early the other day and actually paid for it. I'm like, I want to watch this.
Yeah, I want to see.
I've never done for a boxing match. UFC, I've done Conor's fights, you know, because I'm like, they understand. They've got to really sell you into the fight, right? Because everyone else who's fighting, I'm just like, eh.
If you watch the undercard, no one cares. Not even me. And I'm a boxer, and I was watching the undercard. I was like, flicking through. I was only keen to watch Jay because you want to feel like a personal connection to the person. So if your friend's fighting, you're interested.
Yeah.
That's because, so you want everyone to feel like your friend. You want the fans, not even the friend or enemy. They want you to win or lose. So you kind of want that personal relationship with the fans where they are invested in your win or the loss. So whether it's haters or fans, it doesn't really matter this as long as they're paying for it and selling seats.
So what's your strategy going into, like, are you a shit talker? Do you stir them up? Do you get in their heads? Like, or are you more on the you don't let them know it's coming, then you just come in and
I haven't been a shit talker only because I want to be a shit talker, to be honest, but I'm not naturally a shit talker.
Yeah.
So people like McGregor and Jake, this is their actual personality. They are being who they are in a sense. They may heighten it, but they are who they are. And that's why it's not fake. When you watch it, you're like, this guy's crazy. But if I was to do it, I'd feel like I'd be faking it. I feel like people would see through it and it would be dumb. So I'm trying to stay genuine to who I am. But I also feel like there is ways that I can promote myself without the shit talk, whether it be being classy. I don't know. I've got to establish how my selling point's going to work. And I'm still working on it. Everyone wants me to do the shit talk, to be honest. And I can be petty, to be honest. Pettiness is something I'm better at than shit talking. Like, I can undermine people a lot better. But I'm not good at the getting in their face and all this kind of stuff because it's just not who I am. And I think when you're not who you are and you're not, that's not my personality, people are going to see through it. So, and then I'm going to make a fool of myself because I'm also going to stumble my words. They're going to probably talk better comebacks than I have. So I'm just going to look like an idiot. So I've also got to be smart. Like I can't just follow. They have path to pave away, which I'm like, I get how it works, but I've also got to say something that's true to me as well.
Yeah. Well, you look at like Dustin Poirier. He's like, I saw that last fight with him and Connor, and he's just like this patriotic family man.
Yeah.
And that works for him. It's like people are like, oh, he's loving, he's a good fucking guy.
Yeah.
Like even even when he's winning, he's like, yep, you know, and like, like I saw the authenticity from him and like the genuine like kindness of a human who's just like elite at what he did.
Yeah.
And that kind of worked. But I've heard like knowing what I know now about human psychology, if I was to get back in the ring, I would fucking destroy them.
Yeah,
with language.
Yeah, because you can really if you can sell yourself. I thought Jake Paul could have won that fight because he sold me. Like I was flying into the hype, so maybe Tommy could have bought into the hype too.
So so I saw in the fight with Tommy and Jake, I actually did think Jake was going to win, and we talked about it before we met, right? But I've never seen Tommy fight, but I saw it. Tommy, it was like a fucking sniper.
Yeah.
Jake was coming in for what I saw. I was like, and Tommy's been fighting for years. And that's what we were talking about. I don't know if we're talking about on this show or recording. I'm not, the difference in Muay Thai and fighting, but in boxing. But you can just see that Tommy's been actually, like boxing is just a whole different
It's a
conversation to other fighting. But same as if you put just a boxer in like an MMA cage, it's different again.
It's different.
But like boxing, like someone who's just done it for so long, it's like I just saw every punch from Tommy was very well calculated and it just landed like a fucking sniper.
Yeah.
And I was like, shit, no one's going to knock anybody out. And then instantly when I saw it fighting, I was like, Tommy will win by points.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it was just clean landing.
Clean.
Just every well precise bang, bang, bang. It was fucking mental.
Yeah. Yeah. And I on paper was like, okay, Tommy's got to win this. On paper, when you look at Jake's opponents and then Tommy's amateur career and stuff like that, but then the hype was convincing me otherwise. I was like, this guy Jake Paul is so confident that he's gonna win this that I'm like, I just feel like there's no way he can't. He's placing these double or nothing bets. He's like, I was like, does he know something we don't know? Like, you know, that's selling point.
That's him fucking with it. Could you imagine, like, so let's say Jake's got shitload of money. If he lost, what, so we just saw Tommy got paid $7 million for that fight, and his bet was, okay, if you beat me, I'll double your match. $14 million to Jake, he would be annoyed by it, but his life's totally fine after.
Yeah.
He probably still would have made more from the fight.
Yeah, exactly.
Promoted it and everything else. He didn't give a fuck. But from Tommy, that's his biggest paycheck he's ever in his life.
And it's against Jake Paul. Yeah.
And then to have somebody go, if I beat you, you have to give it all away. But if you beat me, I'll double it all. Like that psychological warfare of that.
Yeah.
To be like, because you'd either be like, yep, take the bet. But then it forces you to actually bring up any doubts of yourself.
Yeah.
That's what he does. Because he's like, I don't give a fuck because I'm absolutely certain and I've got the money.
Yeah.
But the money side, for like, it's And he's done that every single fight.
Yeah.
You have to get my name tattooed. And
yeah.
Because you know, no one's going to be like, yep, okay. Because unless they've got that absolute.
And everyone knows in boxing, you're never guaranteed to win. Everyone's like, I'm certain. But one punch can change everything. It's not a running race. It's not a swimming race. You don't get a time. It's an opinion of five people around the ring. And it's very, even if one guy is a freaking world champion and one guy's from a pup, if you get one shot, and like, obviously, there's a 99% chance the world champion wins, but one shot can change anything. Imagine you just rock someone. Yeah. That's why, like, to make bets that confidently, the self-belief or the mind games, whatever you're trying to play at, it's just, it's smart.
And I've seen Mayweather. Doesn't Mayweather, like, hypnotizes his audience? Like,
does
I've seen,
it? Yeah,
I've seen
yeah.
like, so I'm, like, well into, like, all this, right? And so I've seen some of the things he'll say to his audience. It's all hypnotic language patterns and stuff.
Yeah, true.
Like
saying
things to people, like mind reading comments, like, you know you're going down, for example. Like, you know you're going to lose this. You know you're not as confident as me. Jake does the same thing.
Yeah.
You know you haven't been prepared.
Yeah.
You know you haven't been doing this. And these sort of conversations saying so they speak directly to the unconscious mind. The conscious mind can't filter that.
Yeah.
So it's like called a mind read.
Yeah.
It's just one language pattern. It's always different language patterns. That's why I'm like, if I got in the ring, I would mentally, I would convince them that they're fucked.
That they've already lost.
Convince them that their life's over.
Yeah.
Before we got in the ring.
Yeah. Wow. Oh.
Who are you modeling or who are you looking up to right now in the industry?
To be honest, it'd be Jake Paul.
Yeah.
And I know he didn't win that fight. As an actual boxer himself, I'm not going to say, oh yeah, you're going to beat Canelo. Like, that's not what I'm saying. I just think, the way he's doing it, he earned, what, $30 million in his last fight, and that's his seventh or sixth pro fight.
Yeah.
As much as I'm in it for the longevity of being a world champion, I'm also in it to make money. Like, I want to be in this sport. I want to be the first female fighter out of Australia to earn $1 million. I want to –
In one fight?
Yeah, in a fight. Not in sponsorship, in fight. I want my fight purse. I want to build my name up so big that I can earn $1 million in a fight. And I know there's a road to that, and we're trying to take the right steps to that, but it's just about – and that's where Jake Paul comes in. Like, there's people who fight for world titles who I know have earned $3,000, females. She's been a challenger for $3,000. This is, mind you, female boxing back when she did that wasn't big. And then I also know people like Jake who haven't even fought for a world title earning $30 million.
Because it's how many eyeballs you can bring, really.
It's how many eyeballs you can bring. So I feel like if I'm going to role model someone, it's going to be the person doing that, you know? And then I know I can to continue the skill to back on. I've got other role models for boxing in terms of boxing skill and boxing styles and stuff like that. I've got lots of role models in that sense. But as a business perspective, I feel like Jake Paul is definitely a role model.
He's taking a different approach to it.
Like, yeah.
He's taking business to it.
Yeah. He brings the business side of it. Same with Conor and Mayweather to a degree, except he brought the business and the skill.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who do you think's the best boxer of all time?
Probably Floyd.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying he's like the most exciting boxer of all time. I still think he's exciting, but I think it's on paper 50-0. Like, he's never had a loss. So.
So what's next for you then? What's the big thing? You're 24. What's the big thing by 30?
I actually kind of want to be wrapping my career up at 30 in the boxing ring. I don't want to be fighting past 30. If I can, if I'm on my $1 million paydays, like I aim and aspire to be, then, I will probably maybe push it out to 33 because I'm not going to say no to those sorts of fights. But that's kind of my max. Obviously, being a girl, you've got to start families. I want to get into business after this. I want to build my name and then branch into business. I'm not sure. I was thinking of lots of different things, like training. Like, there's obviously the online training program aspect of it. I just want to build my name big enough that anything can be sellable. And then I can choose what pathways I want to go down, and whether it be training, apparel, whatever I choose to go down. Maybe I can do investing if I'm making the money in the rings that I want. I just want to be smart about it. I don't want to be having to continue boxing for a payday. I want to, you know, I don't know what that looks like yet, but I'll, with my team and stuff, we're looking at that at the moment. We're going to start placing the right foundations down for that.
Cool.
Yeah.
I love it. And what would be any piece of encouragement or advice to people out there that are either wanting to, like, obviously, it sounds like you've had these big dreams and goals for a long time.
Yeah.
This podcast is called Dream Out Loud.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So everyone who listens to this has this burning desire within them.
Yeah.
And they want to bring it out. And I know that big things that gets in people's way is them, the people around them, the opinions, everything you were talking about. What would be like some encouragement or advice to someone who's got this burning desire inside of them? They know they want to create it and they're feeling a little stuck or unsure or even doubting themselves and their ability to do it. What would you say?
First thing I'd say is make sure you enjoy it. There's no point in striving for a dream that you don't enjoy. You want to enjoy the process. Obviously, there's going to be hardship in that, but you still want to have passion for your project and to stay absolutely disciplined and dedicated to it. And you know, you got to continue after pushbacks pushing. So that's where the discipline and dedication would come in. But I don't think that matters if you're not enjoying it as well.
Yeah. I love it. Taylor, this has been amazing. This has been a fun conversation. Where can everybody find you on social media, follow you, and go and watch you beat the shit out of all these other girls?
Most platforms would be Instagram for Taylor Robertson.
Yeah. Beautiful. Okay, and to wrap this up, I got a final question for you.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
If you were to go back to your 18-year-old self and give her 30 seconds of advice, what would it be?
Oh, shit. Everything all works out, honestly. It all works out. Just continue making all the right steps you're making. It's going to work out.
Thank you so much for listening. And if you got value from this episode, it goes such a long way. If you can just take 20 seconds of your time, leave me a 5-star rating and written review, then screenshot this episode and share it to your story. And make sure you tag me for that shout out. And until next time, guys, go out there and dream out loud.